look at your cute face.
Cuties.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hi, I'm Sue. I have a PhD in horribleness, and I am an anomaly.
My name is Casey, and Captain Hammer threw a car at my head, and I am an anomaly.
Welcome to the last episode of Anomaly Supplemental.
It's our final one. It's a little sad.
But I really do feel like we picked the perfect topic to go out on.
Yeah, if we were going to end on anything, it had to be Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
Nerdery, nerd stars, musicals, internet content, new media. It's everything that we do.
Basically.
Yeah. Except spaceships.
Well, they had a limited budget. If Whedon could have, he would have.
Probably, yeah.
Well, we typically have a what you been doing segment, but since this is our last episode, technically this is just us giving you general recommendations.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess these will be our ultimate recommendations.
These are, I was thinking we could maybe talk about the places that we find out about things, right? And in that case, like a lot of the books that I talk about in this segment have been Sword and Laser picks, which is the Sword and Laser podcast by Veronica Belmont and Tom Merritt. And it is a book club that operates on Goodreads and on the podcast. And there are great discussions and always something interesting going on every month. But there is also Book Riot, which is a website which does the Read Harder Challenge every year. They list of categories of books to try and get you to expand your horizons. And you try and read a book that fits one of every category.
If you're a musical theater nerd, BroadwayWorld.com is where I get all my theater news. And there has been a big merge of nerds in there. Brain Pickings is one of my favorite blogs that's about general writing and creativity and also science things.
The Tor website, T-O-R, which is a book publisher, they have a lot of their authors doing rewatches and recaps. So they're watching the original Batman right now and posting recaps on the blog. And there's always some kind of Star Trek rewatch. And just over at tor.com, T-O-R.com. And I'm also a big fan of Star Talk, which is Neil deGrasse Tyson's show / podcast. They broadcast it on the Nat Geo channel, National Geographic channel. But there is also an associated podcast, which has the audio of the show, the TV show, but also additional content from what he calls his Star Talk All-Stars.
How did this get made?
Mm.
Yeah, even though they're bad movies, they are often the fun, bad action / sci-fi / fantasy bad movies. The one that I enjoy going back to over and over again, it's called Solar Babies.
Solar Babies?
Yes, there is apparently a movie called Solar Babies that was produced by Brooks Films, which is Mel Brooks' film company.
Oh my goodness.
And it's like this apocalyptic sci-fi movie with teens, like Adrian Pasdar, who was in Heroes, apparently was in this movie. And the episode of How Did This Get Made that covers it has John Mulaney, who is one of my favorite stand-up comics.
Nice. If you watch a lot of genre television, tuning into sci-fi TV, if you want to hear about Star Trek and feminism, you can listen to me on Women at Warp. If over the years I have convinced you to be interested in checking out Dragon Con, 50 Days of Dragon Con, the podcast.
I'm on Twitter talking about political stuff right now, but hey, I might talk about some nerd stuff every now and then and have some funny things. Yeah.
Yeah. That's everything I can think of.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, I follow Gail Carriker because I've loved her books for years, and my victory of the past year has been getting Jen to read them. Yeah, I've been a fan of Gail Carriker since college, and when I found out that she listened to Anomaly, I was like, it's a person that I like. And, like, of course, since I have no chill, I have avoided as a safety precaution.
I understand. Let's see.
Like, there's a great clip of Lin-Manuel Miranda on Conan where he talks about meeting Weird Al Yankovic for the first time.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm pretty sure I would react the exact same way.
Now, that is a collaboration that I want to hear.
Did you not see the Ham for Ham with Weird Al?
No, but I mean like a significant amount of.
Oh, okay. I was just like, what are you talking about?
Oh my goodness. All right, so what about the stuff that we wanted to talk about but never got around to? First thing that comes to mind for me is we talked a lot about talking about comic books, like mm-hmm. Why the Last Man, Irredeemable, but it's difficult in a sense to talk comic books, especially when we usually do so much TV and movies.
Yeah. I mean, I work with books all the time, you guys. The irony of that is that I barely have time to read because I'm writing about books.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've also wanted to cover Squirrel Girl. Mm. That's been on my list for a long time as a kind of female comedy comic mashup, superhero mashup. I kind of wanted to cover The Dark Crystal and see if my feelings about it from childhood have changed. Because when I was a kid, I did not enjoy it.
It's hard when you're a kid.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reading in movies. Speaking of reading in movies, that takes me to Stargate.
Yeah.
Because you had to read that movie. However, I always wanted to talk about Stargate SG-1. Mm. And we never really got around to it. We're focusing even on a couple of episodes. I know on our list was steampunk in general for a while, which led to Warehouse 13.
Yeah.
And I think these days, the last couple of years, would also have to include The Librarians.
Yeah, I hear good things about that show.
There's a lot. The list was long.
Yeah.
But I mean, feels like the right time.
Yeah, it does feel like the right time to go. But, you know, we'll probably continue on after this, but... Like this specific project, you know, this is our first podcast and
it lasted 5 years.
It did.
Which ain't bad.
It's really cool that it lasted 5 years. Some people don't even make it to 7 episodes.
Nope. Many people don't even make it to 7 episodes.
Some people don't make it to 3.
Yep. But on that note, we got a really, really nice email from Reggie.
We did.
Yeah, I'll just read through it. He writes, "Hello, Sue and Casey. Hearing that Anomaly Supplemental is going away is kind of bittersweet. It sucks because we won't hear you ladies and your wonderful take on all manner of geeky things, but you're going out on a high note, and that is 10 kinds of awesome. In an age where so many things are canceled before their time, or some things overstay their welcome, it's comforting that this isn't the case for Anomaly Supplemental. Even though podcasting has been around for well over a decade, in many ways it still feels very new. With email, social media, and the podcasts themselves, content creators seem so much more accessible. You really get to know the podcasters. And when a show goes away, it feels like you're losing a friend. Doctor Who won't be the same without your Moment of Who. If there's a plus side, it's that I'm going to have to make sure I get to DragonCon so I can catch all of the panels. Thank you for all you've given us through the show. Thank you for the laughs and the feels. Thank you most of all for opening yourselves to the community and for sharing. There have been times when I've been in the dumps and Anomaly Supplemental popping up in my feed was all it took to get me through the day. So thank you for that. You both will be missed. I hope this isn't a goodbye and it's a ta-ta for now. Thanks for the fish, Reggie."
Reggie!
It's really sweet.
Reggie, you're the sweetest.
It's definitely not a goodbye for good.
It's not. I have plans.
Casey has a lot of plans.
I do. I'm really good at planning. Well, should we use the transition music one last time?
Let's do it.
Transition.
Sing-along blog.
Yeah! True facts. This is the first geeky debate I ever had with my husband.
What was the debate question?
It was regarding the relationship between Penny and Billy. And I thought Penny loved Billy, but I think Kevin constructed that as Penny loved Dr. Horrible, and he was like, no. So we had a healthy debate on that, and I just remembered staring at this guy going, I like him a lot.
Aww.
So our first meeting was at a Dungeons & Dragons thing, and then our first big conversation was about Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. I think that those were good omens.
Mm. Which is also a great book.
Also a great book. I wanted to talk about that book, too, but it's too late for that.
That's a great
topic.
Book.
We are now on the main topic.
So I'll say what I say all of the time. If you have not seen this, go watch it. Also, what's wrong with you?
And I will say what I say all the time, which is, if you have not seen this, that's on you.
It's 42 minutes. Go find it. It's worth your time. So the basics, the background. 2008 web series released over 5 days in July of 2008, written by Joss Whedon, his brothers Zach and Jed's wife Marissa. I can't say her last name. Can you say
Tanachin?
There you go.
Tanachin.
I can't connect the letters in it to how it's pronounced, so I can never remember how to do it. And written during the 2007-2008 writer strike, when none of the television and film writers could or would write anything for television or film. And Joss decided, I'm going to do my own thing. This is going to be released on the internet. It's going to be released on the internet for free so that we can create this content and tell this story that we really want to tell. And he funded the project himself at about $200,000. Everybody working on it essentially donated their time while it was being filmed. Based on DVD sales, they were able to pay them later. And the whole thing was filmed over just 6 days.
Yeesh. That is a tight film schedule.
Yeah. I mean, not recorded, just filmed. So, like, they did some pre-recording of the songs.
Well, you have to do that.
Hi, Aswin. And immediately, highly acclaimed, Time Magazine named it one of its the top 50 inventions. I don't know why invention, because web series have existed for over 10 years at this point. But one of the top 50 inventions of 2008, it won the 2009 Hugo for Best Dramatic Presentation Short Form. It took home 7 awards in the inaugural Streamies and won a 2009 Creative Arts Emmy for Outstanding Special Class Short Format Live Action Entertainment Program. They essentially created a category for it.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. And I think in Joss Whedon's acceptance speech, he mentioned that.
Right, because, I mean, this was, as I said, web series had existed for a while. But is it safe to say this was one of the first ones that really, like, garnered such attention?
I would say this one and The Guild, those two are the unparalleled champions of web series productions.
And especially because it came out of the writer's strike, it really forced the industry to sort of take a look at itself and realize that there are more ways, there are more channels now to release content. And it helped creators see that you don't have to wait to get picked up by a studio. You can just put your stuff out there.
Right.
Which really has changed the way that we consume media and, you know, traditional media, as much as television is old enough to be traditional, can't really keep up.
No, it's difficult because television has become such an advertiser's game, and they tried to make the rules apply to digital, both TV producers and advertisers, and they're trying to make that work for web series of their own, and it's just not. The only other big web series that I think it did relatively well within the last few years was the Lizzie Bennet Diaries, and that was also a low cost production. It was just, you know, a girl sitting in front of a blog type camera. So
yeah, I think it depends on what you consider successful in these ways, you know, because there are, depending on what community you're in, successful means a different thing. But I mean, in terms of like critical acclaim and getting the Emmys to pay attention, it's Dr. Horrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Lizzie Bennet also won that same award, now that I think about it. So,
oh, yeah? That was more recent.
Yeah. What I'm considering more in terms of success is both acclaim and financial success. Both of those combined. Critical success, there have been plenty of web series that have garnered that. Video Game High School comes to mind. But at the same time, TV producers are basically trying to produce single camera. I saw a preview for a single camera drama web series, and that looked like it could be on HBO. And I'm like, well, that's dumb. Why did you do that?
And more recently, other people. It's such a weird way to describe it. Some content creators have looked at this situation and seen people going around studios releasing things directly to their audience, and have taken it upon themselves to create things like Patreon, and which allows that audience to support and pay directly to the artist for that content.
Yep.
And it is hugely innovative. If you haven't heard of Patreon, I'm sure as podcast listeners, most of you have, and Anomaly, well, I believe Jen and Angela are planning to set one up. It is sort of like Kickstarter, but there is no top-end goal, and it is either a month-to-month or a creation-to-creation donation.
Mm-hmm.
And it is highly successful. And I know it's helped a lot of artists be able to get more content out and be able to, because of the tips, the support, whatever you want to call them, be able to spend more time actually creating things rather than, you know, putting extra time in at a survival job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oswin.
I mean, Oswin. Is she stuck in a box again?
No, she's eating a paper bag.
Oh, that's close enough. Ah, words. There was a thing in my head and then Oswin ate a paper bag.
Sorry.
No, but I'm thinking of the content creators that are using Patreon right now. Some of them are huge, like Crash Course with John Green and Hank Green. Sword and Laser.
Amanda Palmer. I don't think Marion Call uses Patreon yet.
No, I think she uses PayPal, a little tip jar.
But she has... She created a Patreon-like model that she called the Donor Circle before Patreon existed.
Right.
So it's clearly a model that artists sort of come up with.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's great. It's just really encouraging that not only that it exists now, but that it really has taken off. And the people working there are all Patreon creators. Well, not all, but often Patreon creators as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they understand the needs of that community, both as patrons and as creators. And it's kind of awesome. And I feel like the line can be drawn back pretty clearly to things like this, to things like Dr. Horrible and the Guild.
Yeah, I think so too. In that way, Dr. Horrible was definitely revolutionary, I think. But the big thing with Dr. Horrible that I recall is that Joss Whedon is quoting that he makes more money off of Dr. Horrible than he has with the Avengers, than he has directing a big budget superhero movie.
Is that because the funds go directly to him rather than through a studio?
Yeah, because that's with a big studio like that, it's pretty much working for Marvel corporate.
Right.
So
you're getting paid what you're getting paid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Joss is he and his family are the sole creators of Dr. Horrible. This was like their little family business.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
In the DVD extras, somebody says, I forget which actor it was, it might have been Neil Patrick Harris, says that it's like they're making a family movie that they've invited you to be a part of.
Yeah. And it's because they did Dr. Horrible that Joss Whedon felt like he could have the freedom to do other small projects like In Your Eyes and Much Ado About Nothing.
Mm-hmm. It seems like almost the impetus or the confirmation that he needed that he could just fund something he wanted to do and people would like it.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of that, let's be clear, for Joss Whedon comes from the fact that he had this network TV success, if you want to call it that, and following from things like Buffy and Angel and everything that he did before. So people knew his name. It wasn't like you or me creating this web series and hoping it took off. But it still creates a pathway and it creates an example to follow.
Yeah. And also a major part of Dr. Horrible's success was Felicia Day, because she had created the Guild by this point. And she was there with everybody saying, well, why don't you use this program to set up this and this and this and this, because she had already been through the rigmarole of producing an original web series.
And I mean, she really saw the industry change around her and was sort of a leader in making it change.
Yeah.
Because Dr. Horrible sort of happened in the middle. The Guild already existed. But by its fifth season, the Guild had sponsorship from Microsoft. And it changed around her. She was one of the, with Geek and Sundry, was one of the very first channels in the way that we know them now on YouTube. So it's interesting and awesome to see people in the geek community who get it and who love what they're doing and love what they're making, leading the charge in this way.
Absolutely. Also, it's just a really well done production.
Oh, it's absolutely brilliant.
It's so good. So let's talk about it.
So Sing Along Blog, the best. The humor is out of this world. The music is fantastic. There are clearly some Sondheim influences in there.
And you can also see the influences of Alan Menken and Howard Ashman from Little Shop of Horrors. They're not so obvious that it's like, oh, you replaced this guy with this guy. But if you look at it, you're like, yeah, Penny's Audrey. The main guy is Seymour, except this time he really wants to be evil. He's not an amoral guy hiding behind a good guy persona. And instead of a sadomasochistic dentist, we have a superhero who's just an asshat.
Completely self-absorbed. I think one of my favorite things, I need to stop saying that because they're all my favorite thing. But another one of the bits of information on the DVD extras is that this was, of course, post-Firefly. And Nathan Fillion looked at his phone and saw that Joss Whedon was calling. And when he answered it, didn't even say hello, just said yes. Because he figured that if Joss Whedon was calling him about something, the answer was going to be yes.
Yeah. And apparently later when they went to like prep songs or record them, he looked at everyone and was just like, just so you know, I've never done this before. All right, let's do this.
Yeah, I mean, he, by all reports, was nervous about the singing because, of course, NPH has been on Broadway, has since won a Tony Award. Mm-hmm. Felicia Day is like a musical prodigy. So, I mean, yeah, even though he's Nathan Fillion, you can still be intimidated.
Yeah.
And I think that happens to a lot of people when singing.
Yeah. Like, I know I can sing, but once I get in an audition room, it all just flies away. Mm. All just flies away.
I mean, but they all killed it.
Yeah, they did.
And I especially, like, I think we have to mention now, everybody talks about Felicia, Nathan, and Neil, because we're on a first name basis now. But with the success of Big Bang Theory, we should mention Simon Helberg, too.
Oh, yeah.
Who
doesn't
really sing a whole lot in this, but when he does a good job. Although Moist is a fantastic henchman.
Yeah, he is. Time Glass knows a kid who lives in Iowa who's going to become the next president. I'm not going to kill a kid. Oh, you could smother an old lady.
I love the villain names that they just throw in there.
I know.
Like bait and switch. What is it? Professor Normal.
Professor Normal.
So great.
Bad Horse is just my favorite. Especially when the ending is revealed and you go, oh, he's literally a horse. He is a horse. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't expecting that. And after the drama that is the third and final episode, I just burst out into laughter when I saw a horse at the head of a conference table inside.
Right. I don't think anybody's expecting a real horse. And the actors weren't expecting a real horse. It's just so great. And the conference room where they're all sitting, the Evil League of Evil, apparently they just called up their friends and were like, come up with a costume. Come sit around this table.
One of them is Joss Whedon's little brother, Jed. It's Jed Whedon as Evil David Bowie.
I thought it was Dead Bowie.
Dead Bowie, whatever.
Yeah, which is especially poignant this year.
Thomas Jefferson
is also there.
Yes. Also, Jed was one of the Bad Horse Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Bad horse, bad horse, bad horse, bad horse.
So good. I mean, I don't know what else to talk about with the plot. It's super tight. It's super funny. And then, you know, Joss rips our heart out like he always does.
As per usual.
Per usual. And then, like, to go even more ridiculous and meta, they make commentary of the musical. So one of the actual commentary tracks is essentially another musical because they sing over the entire thing, all 42 minutes of it. Mm-hmm. And the songs basically reference themselves. Zach Whedon, one of the creators, says that it's like breaking the ninth wall. And it's so ridiculous. There's a real commentary as well, where you actually learn something about the production. But even commentary, the musical, like, got pretty high on the iTunes charts when you could buy it, which is just a little bit ridiculous.
But the songs are so good.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, Heartbroken by Joss Whedon is one of my favorite songs, especially the version he sang for This American Life. Just that revised version where he goes, my fame, my precious quasi fame. What am I doing? There are people watching. I honestly, I know he's gotten a bit of flack, but I love him and I love his writing. And I just want to go to one of his parties where they read Shakespeare and get drunk and sing.
Yeah, he seems like a theater kid living the dream at this point.
Him and Lin-Manuel Miranda, man. Mm. How do I get their jobs?
Be a genius.
Can I just write the coattails of one?
Sure.
Okay. Hey, Kevin, go write a musical. Okay.
Aw. Do we want to talk about the content a little bit more? So Neil Patrick Harris, Dr. Harwell. Nathan Fillion as, like, the totally clueless, totally self-absorbed Captain Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Felicia Day as Penny. They work so well together. Every line is quotable.
Absolutely. I mean, the most famous one being, the hammer is my penis.
Right.
But there's also great social commentary in there.
Oh,
which
absolutely.
Which is weird. Like, the news part during...
So they say,
yeah. Where... they talk about, like, a little bit of news, and they go, next up, who's gay?
Yeah, because the news is not the news anymore.
We don't even know which news is the real news anymore.
The world is a mess, and I just have to rule it.
Yep.
I hate the homelessness problem in this city. So great. Something I love, and I think this comes out of, like, the... I don't even know what to call it. The openness of the internet creating, the lack of studio, whatever it is. But just a little bit more than a month after this was released originally in 2008, the first authorized Rocky Horror-esque sing-along of this happened at Dragon Con.
Yeah.
And
I'm listening.
They do this with the Buffy episode as well, with Once More With Feeling. and used to do both of them in one block, and now they switch off year to year. But it's totally shadow cast. People are singing along, and there's room, or this room full of literally thousands of people who know every single word, and it's just a fantastic experience.
Also, they do it at colleges now, apparently. They are performing bootleg versions of...
I'm not surprised by that at all.
Yeah. Like, I looked one of them up, and they added the Moist number to their production.
It took off. It flew.
Yeah. And thing about this story is that, in a way, it is kind of a... not a tragic comedy, per se, where it starts sad and then it ends happy, but it's switched where it starts like a comedy, but it ends on a tragic note. So comedy, tragedy.
Yeah. I mean, it rips your heart out.
Yeah. And it comes from nowhere.
And I mean, we get also the most clear example of everyone's the hero in their own story.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because we're following the villain through all of this.
Exactly.
But are we really? Because we find out that Captain Hammer doesn't actually care about anything. He just cares about, you know, who he's going to get in bed next.
Not even that. His line to him, he said, "I get what you want." Talking
totally.
To Billy about this. Yeah. So he doesn't even care about what chick he's going to bang next. He's just like, "I'm doing this out of spite. And I'm being petty." But even then, he has a lyric just like, "This is so nice. I might just sleep with the same girl twice."
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so do you have a little bit of depth? But then he's an asshole during his speech. Mm-hmm. And
well, and Billy is doing all of this to get Penny's attention, which is misguided. But then at the very end, after she dies, we see him. He's getting everything he says that he wants. And then the very last line of the entire thing is, "And I don't feel a thing."
Yeah.
And it, oh.
It's a weird metaphor for thinking that I don't think he's even going after the attention of Penny. I think he's mainly focused on being in the evil league of evil, and Penny will love him as a bi thing of that.
Well,
words,
no, in the very beginning, the whole
yeah.
lead-in to Laundry Day is you always
yeah.
say you're going to make her notice who's her.
Yeah. But then the thing about that is that she meets him when he's Billy, and she likes him just fine. And he brings her frozen yogurt, and he is...
What a crazy random happenstance.
I know. And he's slightly creepy and awkward, but also kind of lovable. And he drives a spork into his leg. It's just so good. But it's kind of like, hey, I'm going to get to the top here. And then she's going to see me. But then he gets to the top and...
She's not there. Yeah.
Yeah. Not only is she not there, but...
It's at her expense.
It's at her expense. Yeah. I mean, it was a complete accident and she's dead. And then people ask him, why did you kill her?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like... Oh, I don't think this is what he wanted.
And leave it to this creative team to take something ridiculous and funny and silly and then make it deep and painful.
Mm-hmm. I have a good question for you.
Sure.
What is your favorite song from Dr. Horrible Sing Along Blog? Like the one that you keep coming back to?
All of them.
No. This is like Solomon, King Solomon and the baby, the splitting in the half, even though that didn't really happen.
I really love So They Say, because everybody sings something, because we see where everyone is, and it sets everything up for what's about to happen, which is reminiscent to me of Opening Doors from Merrily We Roll Along.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm forced to pick one, I'm going with Brand New Day, because... Again, like Sondheim, this is basically our mental breakdown song.
Yeah.
This is our patter
song. That was the song that was at the top of my list, too.
Yeah. Which is not surprising between the two of us.
No. Disappeared is a moral dilemma, because at first it was weird, though I swore to eliminate the worst of the plague that devoured humanity. It's true, I was vague on the house, so how can it be that you have shown me the lie? I guess if I have to pick something that isn't A Brand New Day. I know we keep going back to the finale, but I really like Everything You Ever. Hmm. That song just makes me cry all the time. I like songs that make me cry, which is probably why I don't listen to music a lot. Because crying hurts.
But I also have to say that I am a big fan of My Freeze Ray, which is the first song. You know,
yeah.
Because it's the first song, it's like your overture in a way, and it just introduces you to what this is going to be, and it does it so, so well.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the humor, you get Dr. Horrible's determination at the same time that you get Billy's awkwardness. You see the love that he has for Penny. You see what Penny is interested in and what motivates her. It's just so good.
I was also thinking about I Cannot Believe My Eyes, which has my favorite comedy bit where they're in the soup kitchen and Neil Patrick Harris takes the place of the soup person and just keeps spooning soup into the same, like into the pot. And he's just handing out empty bowls as he's staring at them. It's my favorite visual of all time.
There's so much great stuff like that peppered throughout. It's so wonderful.
I wish there were more TV shows, movies, web series of this quality.
Well, not everybody is Joss Whedon and has $200,000 that they can throw at a three-part web series.
Well, they need to try harder.
I have like $2 that I could put towards a web series.
I'm getting my iPhone. We're going to make something beautiful.
So since we're talking about the visuals, there were two things I found out that relate back to Firefly, which I think was really interesting.
Yeah.
The freeze ray, which later becomes the death ray, as we know, is a stun gun carried by Alliance troopers in Firefly, held upside down. And the lab coat is the same one that Simon Tam uses to disguise himself as a doctor in the episode Ariel. Ariel, if you're Disney. And the best part of that, in my opinion, is that apparently NPH unsuccessfully auditioned for the role of Simon Tam.
Yeah, I remember hearing about this story because he auditioned. They both really liked each other, but Joss went, you know, you've already played a doctor technically, and I don't want to typecast you. And Neil said, I appreciate that.
And then they worked together on this.
Where he was a doctor.
Yeah, it's true. Totally but it was like different kind of doctor.
It's a totally different kind of doctor. Not a medical doctor.
So, sequel?
This has been going on for a while. Ever since 2009, which is now 7 years ago.
Yuck.
Joss Whedon and company have said, we want to make a sequel. Obviously, people became very busy. And even now I'm wondering, I don't know if I need a sequel. Like, I'm fine without it.
The thing is, I trust this creative team so much, and not just, you know, the Whedons, but also the main cast, that if they feel there is another story to tell, they wouldn't just make it for the money, because that's not the point. Like, they're not a studio.
Right.
They would make it because they have a story to tell. And the most recent news, I guess, is from April of 2015, which is still over a year ago. But Joss Whedon said that he basically didn't think it was going to happen anymore, and then went to see Neil Patrick Harris in Hedwig and the Angry Inch on Broadway, which was amazing, by the way.
Yep.
And he went backstage, and apparently the first thing that Neil said to him was, when are we doing the sequel? So the cast still wants to do it, or much of the cast at least still wants to do it, but they're all super busy all the time.
Although Castle recently got canceled, I think Neil Patrick Harris rapped on Lemony Snicket's series of unfortunate events. And Felicia Day has mainly been focusing on her writing, but like she's not getting any calls from Supernatural or anything. Just, I mean, I think the only people who may be slightly busy are Marissa. I think I pronounced her name wrong earlier, too. Marissa and Jed, I think, are a little busy since they are the showrunners of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd watch it I'm pretty sure you'd watch it.
Yeah. And honestly, Joss having a story means he has something he wants to say about society and the world, because that's what most of his works are, even the Avengers.
That's what art is.
Absolutely.
Or should be, at the very least.
Should be. You know, sometimes we need a little House Hunters renovation in our life, which I binged on today while I was cleaning.
No, okay, see, here's the thing. Reality TV, most of it, is not art. It's entertainment.
No. Yeah, and...
they're different things.
They are different things, but we could also use more art in our lives.
And then there's reality TV that is about art, which is things like RuPaul's Drag Race, where the show itself is not art, but they're showing the world an art form.
Yeah. And Project Runway and the dearly departed work of art on Bravo that I absolutely loved. And it was so weird and I loved it.
And that only lasted like 8 episodes or something.
I think it got 2 seasons.
Did it really? I've only seen the first one.
Oh, I was a dedicated watcher. I'm like, what is going to happen next?
I'm going to have to go find it.
They were so weird and I loved them.
And Face Off, which we talked about, we did a whole episode on the show. And another, the short-lived, which is apparently the correct way to pronounce that word, short-lived.
What?
Yeah, according to Grammar Girl Mignon Fogarty. short-lived. Jim Henson's Creature Shop Challenge.
Yeah.
So, like, when the show is actually about the art, it almost takes on a documentary feel. I mean, not feel, but, like, you're not just watching the drama unfold between contestants. You're watching and learning about what they actually do and about, you know, why they're passionate about it.
And you're also learning about your own aesthetics as well.
Mm-hmm.
Art is very important, especially independently made art like Dr. Horrible Sing Along Blog and The Guild. Mm-hmm. You know, things that content creators are making.
And podcasts.
And podcasts. Welcome to Night Vale is now one of the most popular podcasts. And, like, there is a huge fan base for these things. Like, yes, it's niche, but they're huge.
And these independently made things, because they don't have the backing of a big studio or a giant marketing firm, it's part of the reason why the creators want it to be as accessible as it is. Mm-hmm. You know, there are podcasters who will put their show out on as many platforms as possible. And that's a lot of work. There are a lot of platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Anomaly is on iTunes and on Stitcher and was in the Zune store when that existed.
Yep.
You know, in as many places as it can possibly be, because the more places you are, the more chances that you'll reach somebody. And geez, it gets to the point of, like, I don't want to sound self-important, but that's kind of the goal, right? Like, we enjoy talking about this stuff and talking about art and pontificating about whatever, but, like, to get an email like the one we got from Reggie that says, you guys helped me get through a difficult day, like, that is not the goal that we set out to meet when creating this stuff, but it is certainly something that keeps us going, you know? Even though we're ending, so maybe that's not the best analogy.
Good job, but, guys.
Yeah. not what I meant. It's not for lack of feedback. No. But it makes you feel that what you're doing is important and what you're doing is possibly reaching people or making them think differently about something.
Mm-hmm.
Or expanding their horizons to something they may not have ever heard of. I feel that way, especially when we've talked about books on the show. Yeah, I got a little bit off track there.
It's okay.
Art is important.
Very.
All right, I don't think I have anything more to say on this, because I'll just go off on another tangent.
Yeah, I mean, what else is there to say? I mean, I really like this. I think Dr. Horrible Sing Along Blog is probably my favorite thing of the Whedon fandom, honestly, because it just speaks to me.
Totally. This really was the perfect thing for us to talk about as our final episode, because, I mean, musical, content creation, accessibility of media, I mean, everything that we have talked about is sort of been the through line, I think, for the stuff that we have chosen to talk about over the last 5 years.
Right.
So I guess on that note, I think we need to say some thank yous.
Yeah.
A thank you to Mary and Call for giving us the permission to use her song, I'll Still Be a Geek, as our theme song. And to Rick Moyer for always being there and helping to create fun little things like our transition song to insert into the shows. Mm-hmm. To Simon Meddings for recording our intro and outro all those ages ago. To Jen and Angela for allowing us space in the feed for these last 5 years. Mm-hmm. To Anne and Sarah and everyone who has been even semi-regular appearing on Anomaly Supplemental. And am I missing anybody? I didn't write these down. I'm doing this off the top of my head, and I realized I made a list.
No, I know, and it's very sweet. I want to thank the listeners. You guys are the reason why we do what we do. I mean, yeah, we do just like talking out into the void, but it's nice that there are other people in the void. And I also want to thank you for doing this with me for 5 years.
Aw, thanks, Casey.
I made a really good friend.
Hey,
look,
Internet.
I made a friend. Look, I made a friend today. Bianca Del Rio, queen of my heart.
I'm so glad that I got you watching Drag Race, because another friend got me watching Drag Race. It's so great. Spread the art.
Spread the art that is RuPaul's Drag Race. Well, I guess this is the end.
Don't get weepy on me now.
Not.
We'll be back. There's more stuff in the works.
Yeah, there is. We're just keeping it a secret right now.
And I think for the last time, that is it. So I'm Sue.
I'm Casey.
And all of this has been Anomaly Supplemental.
We never had a tagline, and nope. Now we never will.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental news, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
World is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval.
Do you have enough creds to get into the Henchmen's League?